You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
This edition of It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, your partner for global wealth creation. Welcome to It's My Money. It's My Money is brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, South Africa's multi-award-winning boutique wealth manager. And today I'm talking to one of the co-founders of Brenthurst Wealth, none other than Magnus Haystack. Now, we're doing this It's My Money a little bit later than normal because I know from one of your colleagues that you've had a very, very busy week at Brenthurst. What have you been up to?
Lindsay, good afternoon. It's been a busy 3 weeks, and I can tell you exactly when it started. It was 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago when Cyril Ramaphosa announced that he had signed the expropriation bill. And it was just like a lightning rod. It hit, you know, a lot of people saying, gosh, this is not only talk anymore. It is now law. We need to do something. And since then, quite astonishing how many people have come forward, said, listen, we need to talk to you. We need to take some money offshore. We need to look at structures to protect ourselves. So we have just been inundated, and I commented to a fund manager friend of mine who runs local funds, and I said, you know, I feel sorry for your guys, but there is no appetite for your product. Nobody is interested. They are all now starting to seriously create, you know, their offshore nest eggs, and in a very, very substantial way. And I commented with one of my clients. I said, you know, it reminds me of the old saying that there were only two types of Rhodesians or ex-Rhodesians, those who had taken their money offshore and those who had wished they had taken their money offshore. We're kind of in that environment at the moment, which is, you know, it's just a reflection of the uncertainty that has been created by the expropriation bill, which is so unnecessary. People have got no confidence in the country, and they're just saying, take it out.
Yes, with or without the expropriation bill and with or without Trump withdrawing aid to South Africa and all sorts of other things, the fact is you don't need vindication, do you? Because you've been talking about this for years, Magnus.
Well, I've been trying to advise people that, you know, diversification is very necessary from an economic and a financial point of view. And that has been proven to be the case. But in the last couple of years, there's a political dimension to that advice. Is the politics is starting to become a threat. And when a law is signed that may or may not allow the state to grab your property without compensation, then the reality gets closer. And then people start questioning, what does it mean? What kind of property? What kind of assets? And I've had many, many calls, and I ask, does it include my pension fund, my medical aid fund? And I say, I don't know. And, you know, that's the uncertainty that has been created.
Yeah, the unusual thing is that Cyril Ramaphosa is a businessman. He's, by definition, having made his billions, he's a capitalist, but now he's suddenly shifted and gone the other way, or he's trying to appease the people that are the other way, if you see what I mean.
I understand 100% the way he professes to be a capitalist, but, you know, if you read very carefully all his pronouncements and speeches over the last 5, 10, or even longer, there is a massive streak of socialism, state control, centralism in his way of thinking. And it's becoming very, very clear that they're not stopping, they're not turning around. And I think the expressions that when he signed the National Health Insurance Act, his comment was, whether you like it or not, you know, totally authoritarian, I will do whether you like it or not. And that debate in itself is not a healthy debate. It's a very uncomfortable debate. So then you have the Trump factor, where you've got AfriForum, Solidarity, going to talk to Trump or Trump's people. They're now being accused of treason, which is totally ridiculous. But the heat has just gone up quite a lot, and the debate has become very, very intense as to the future of South Africa.
Well, the good thing is that the Rand has behaved itself rather well in the face of all these headwinds that you've just spoken of. And you've only just spoken of one, and that's the South African political situation. But you said you'd had 3 weeks of busyness. I mean, we had the end of the tax year, which I know kept you and your colleagues very, very busy indeed. But what else have you had? So you've had the tax year, you've had expropriation bill, and lots of calls from people wanting to get more money out. What else have you had?
Well, you know, a lot of people are asking the question, and it's a very, very sensitive discussion. They actually sit in the office and they say, what do you think, should our kids go offshore or not, go and work in Europe or in England or New Zealand or whatever the case might be? And I try and answer it as delicately as possible. And I say, you know, it's like asking somebody, should I marry that person or not that person? It's a very, very personal. But I say that send your kids abroad, let them gain exposure and experience, maybe build some capital. And if they like it, they can stay. And if they don't like it, they can always come back with some experience. And that, to be fair, it does happen. A lot of people go off after 10, 15 years, they build some capital, and they do return to South Africa. But at the moment, it's a little bit of a one-way, you know, I've got to get my kids out of the country. Now, that to me is quite dangerous, because you're exporting intellectual capital. You're exporting very qualified people. They are CAs, engineers, chartered accountants, and the like. And they go and set up their little businesses elsewhere, not in South Africa.
There was a saying for that. When I first came to South Africa in 1988, Magnus, there was a saying for someone with one foot in South Africa and one foot somewhere else. And in a way, you are as well, because of your Mauritius, substantial Mauritius presence. And I won't say the word, but I know what it means. But there is a good way of saying it, isn't it? That, yes, try, you know, test the waters overseas first, and if you like it, then come back for holidays. If you don't like it, then come back with your capital. And it is a prudent piece of advice, I think, that you've given.
You know, many years, my thinking, my own life has been shaped by a book. I think it was written 30 years or so ago, called The Sovereign Individual. And, you know, it basically said, you know, in a very nutshell, it's a very complicated book, but it basically says, try and take control of your life as best you can in terms of what you do, your assets, your career, and so on. Don't be beholden to governments, change of governments or laws that can protect prevent yourself from doing this. I have, for more than 30 years, always said our biggest problem in South Africa is the exchange controls that still sits there and prevents people from taking money out. After they've legally paid their taxes, they're not allowed to take their money out. And that was changed slightly 10 or so years ago. So, but they haven't adjusted those limits. So there is still exchange control. So I do not like the fact that there's some government authority who can make a decision that impacts on my life. And that's just my idiosyncratic approach to life. That's why I have been, for my clients and for myself, building plan B's. Nothing to do with politics. It's the fact that I want the freedom of my money when I choose to do so, and that under exchange controls, you can't do that.
It's everyone's right to have a freedom of money if you have paid your taxes, as you quite rightly say. Okay, we've covered a number of issues already. I think you had a conference this week, Magnus, because I saw pictures of you with two other people. You were the keynote speakers or the panelists or whatever you want to call it. What happened there?
Yeah, we had a webinar yesterday, and it's tremendously successful. And we're basically discussing the current situation. But we had a very, very smart guy on the – well, there were two smart guys, and it wasn't me. One was Terence Corrigan from the South African Institute of Race Relations. And he's been spending a lot of his time over years studying and analyzing the impact if government goes ahead with the Expropriation Act. And that was very insightful, very academic, very deep thinker as to what are the potential scenarios under this scenario. And this, to summarize very briefly, the one is – nothing happens, and the law stays there, but nothing ever happens. Mm-hmm. Scenario B is that the law is applied in specific instances where the government really needs the land to put electrical pylons or build a dam or build a road for economic development on a free market price establishment for your piece of land. Again, not an issue. Most countries in the world have this concept of eminent domain. Government wants a piece of land, they will negotiate, pay a price, and it's theirs. The third scenario is when the whole thing breaks down and government officials start abusing the act for their own personal reasons, In other words, you empower an official, a corrupt official, who identifies a strategic piece of land which belongs to somebody else, and they come up with some cockamamie story that it's needed for some kind of development, public interest, etc., etc., and they confiscate the land for no compensation. And he says then all hell will break loose, and that's the worst possible scenario. So that was the way he summarized it, and I thought that was quite nice.
Is it the case that people are being a little bit overreactive to this expropriation bill or act whenever it gets signed in, and they say, well, that means that I can have my house taken or my farm taken, whatever it is? Is it not the case, though, that it will be unused, unproductive land that could be expropriated? Or will it be like Zimbabwe, where, you know, tobacco farms, for example, were overrun and people were driven off their land? There must be some devil in the detail somewhere there.
Always. But there's the danger that this system is used by unscrupulous and corrupt cadres, and we have ample evidence that that happens, where people identify a valuable piece of land and for whatever reason they decide to expropriate it for their benefit, not for the benefit of the government. In other words, the system can be abused by corrupt officials. And considering the massive prevalence of corruption in all societies, that scenario is, in my view, potentially the one that's going to happen. You're going to get the corrupt cadres stepping in there, picking and choosing, and then and having a go at assets in a multiple of ways. You know, that's basically my view, because essentially, I think the number was thrown around that there's about 400 government officials, in terms of this act, who will be empowered to expropriate land if they decide to do so. And that's quite a scary thing. And if you look at the tremendous levels of corruption in any state government department, provincial department, with tenders and coal tenders and oil tenders, wherever there's someone is stealing along the line, that might happen.
It's been 31 years now, Magnus, hasn't it, since democracy, 1994, lest we forget, and it's still going on. Or the threat of it is still going on.
It is. You know, it is. There are signs that you cannot, you know, deny. I've been very critical of our mainstream economies not speaking out about how bad it is. Now, this week there were two, to me, significant economic facts that came out. One was there was a study done by all the – I'm not sure who did the study, but they measured the economic performance of the G20 countries – post-COVID. So it's a nice starting point. You take February 2020, and what has happened since then? And they rated them top to bottom. And of course, South Africa was the worst. They're the worst of all 20. So statistically, we've done the worst in terms of economic recovery. Then the GDP numbers came out for 2024. It showed us that we're 0.6% growth again, and when everybody was expecting a percent or a percent and a half. And then yesterday, very tellingly, Nikki Weimar, who's the economist at NEDBACK, was speaking at some seminar, and she actually mentioned the infrastructure in South Africa has collapsed. Those were her words. It has collapsed. Now, the economists are coming out and saying it is collapsed. You can't get a railway line from Joburg to Pretoria because it's not there anymore. Coal trucks that used to run from Joburg to, or from the coal fields to Richards Bay, not happening anymore. You know, and so she used the word infrastructure in South Africa has collapsed. Now that's a big statement for a mainstream economist.
Yes, and it's a disincentive to actually build a railway line, isn't it? Because if you build a railway line which has got valuable metal and stuff that can be ripped up and sold, you just don't want to do that. And I was talking to someone who lives in Johannesburg. You know him. I won't say his name, but He didn't have water for 36 hours, and he's in a smart area of Johannesburg. So whether it be railways being, rail lines being stolen or copper cables being stolen, it's reservoirs in Johannesburg that are leaking, it's potholes on a road, so you're driving along, you get a flat tire, and then immediately you're vulnerable because you're standing by the side of the road. It is. I think collapsing is maybe even a slight understatement. I think it's collapsed, actually.
Well, for the first time in many, many, many months, I actually left my home, which is outside of Johannesburg, and I traveled to have lunch with some friends. And I went to Ilowa, which is right in the middle of Johannesburg, formerly a very affluent suburb. Mm. You know, getting there and back in the traffic, especially after Friday afternoon coming back, was just horrendous. I mean, an hour and a half, almost 2 hours of no robots, broken robots, potholes, and you know, it's just, I just don't know how people do that on a daily basis, traveling to and from, you know, Johannesburg. And I wonder what it does to productivity and everything else. And just by the way, I was driving through the center of Sandton, and there's this restaurant in Sandton where there was a shooting last night. And there were 7 people shot with AK-47s in an upmarket restaurant in the middle of Sandton.
To what end? I mean, were they targeted, or were they just being robbed, or what?
Well, it looks like it was a revenge killing. There were 3 people killed, and one of the guys killed was called a gangster on some of the tweets I saw. He was a well-known gangster. Mm. So this was a mafia-type hit, middle of Sandton, prime restaurant. And they just take out 3 dead and 4 injured badly with AK-47s. You know, that's what we're living with. If you speak to the Europeans, they're horrified when they listen to this.
Yes. Hmm. Very, very sobering stuff. It was the webinar interactive? In other words, could people ask questions after you and your 2 fellow speakers spoke, or was it just you speaking?
Yes, always. Always.
And what were the main concerns then? What were the main concerns that came across?
The main concerns was, how do you get your money offshore? Strangely, you know, they said, where do we go? Who do we speak to? And we had to explain, you know, it's fairly simple. You take your million-rand allowance, you go to your bank or your forex broker, move it to an offshore account, and it's done, you know. So we did the ABC of offshore investing.
Good. And on that sad but very relevant point, we'll leave it there, Magnus. And please stay safe. I don't know why you're in Johannesburg or just outside Johannesburg, why you're not in the Cape. But I know you've got a couple of properties down there as well. Magnus Haystack is a co-founder of Brenthurst Wealth. And that was It's My Money. It's My Money was brought to you by Brenthurst Wealth, an award-winning boutique wealth management company.